Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is episode 107. Today's episode is two Svelte forms enter and one form leaves. And with that, we have our co-hosts on today, the amazing Craig Shoemaker and the multi-decade, multi-century man, Ward Bell.
Ouch! Ouch. Just because I was born before electricity doesn't mean you have to.
Wow, really? Is that true? Oh, we were just talking before the show, everybody, about how different movie references were out and trying to figure out if they were this century or last century. And oddly, it was starting to get difficult for us to remember which century movies were from, given we're 20 years into this one right now. So, my memory is not as good as it used to be. How about yours, Ward?
It's like a steel sieve. All right.
Craig was just looking for the free lunch. So on today's show today, because today is today, by the way. So on today's show, we have a special guest. His name is Kevin Aberg, and he is the creator of Svelte Forms on GitHub. Nice to meet you, Kevin.
Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you guys as well.
Well, this is great to have you on because we've been diving more and more into Svelte. And this is one of the topics that came up when I was on the Discord page for Svelte, which we probably should put a link to up in the show notes as well, which is a great place for the community to chat if you're into Svelte or learning about it. But this topic came up and your name was bandied around quite a bit inside there. So I appreciate you coming on today to talk to us.
Yeah, no problem.
And for those of you out there who aren't familiar with Kevin, let me give you a little information about him. Kevin's a front-end developer who's gone all in on Svelte. He's based in Stockholm, Sweden, and he teaches Svelte and runs a learning platform called Svelte School. And he also taught us what Svelte means in Swedish, which would you mind educating everybody out there?
Yeah, so the word that sounds like Svelte in Swedish basically means famine. So it has a pretty negative connotation, but makes it a bit funny to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's the only time I've ever laughed at the word famine in my life. So, yeah. And I know I feel really guilty and bad.
Well, you know, Svelte is a very lean, you know,
yeah,
bare bones,
that's the thing, right?
You know, skin hanging off of it, kind of.
It kind of fits at the same time. Like even if the word is pretty negative.
You know, we were going so much these days and we gotten used to things like Yahoo and Google, you know, these nonsense words that don't really mean anything, which have taken on, now Google does, right? But you have all these frameworks and some of them tend to lean towards what they do, but not many, right? So it's kind of interesting that Svelte kind of does, the name does reflect probably its most noticeable attribute, that it is small. It's known for being small, slender, skinny, tiny bundle size, right?
Everything else is kind of the John Candy.
John Candy, this century or last century? When did he pass away?
Anyway, if I have a like keeping the theme going, if I have a hunger for forms, how do I meet the need? What's the story? Wait, really? What's the story behind this? What's your journey here, Kevin? How did you get to Svelte, and then how did you decide you needed to fatten it up with some forms?
Yeah. So like a lot of people, I got into Svelte when version 3 was released last year, I think in around May or so. And I just fell in love instantly, especially coming from React. Just all of the boilerplate that you have to do compared to Svelte made it really shine in my eyes. And so I dove in. I started building stuff and I ended up realizing I need forms, right? Because who doesn't need forms? Everyone uses forms. So I started doing like the first prototype was called Easy Forms. And it was pretty much like ready-made components for a for Svelte forms, pretty much. The Easy Forms library was a, like I said, just a couple of components that made it easy to use forms in Svelte. But it had a pretty big drawback in that it was pretty hard to style it. And I tried out a number of different forms, and they all, like, I always came back to the same conclusion that it's hard to style them and make them do what you want. And so this is how I ended up building Svelte Forms. Svelte Forms is pretty much a form library that gets out of your way. So it's made so that you can use any kind of components. Like, you can come with your own custom input components or checkboxes or selects or whatever you want. And then the library will just pick out all of the values from it and then hand you a nice data structure.
So I just dropped in the links in the show notes for Easy Forms and the Svelte Forms, both on your GitHub page, which one of them is in your personal GitHub page, the other is in your Svelte School, which is must be one of your organizations.
Correct. Yeah.
On GitHub. Yeah.
So I need a little help. I need a little help here, though. So I like to start with, like, what goes wrong for me if I just use straight up HTML in here and, you know, in regular Svelte? I mean, where do I go wrong? What's the need for me to say, wow, you're solving my problem? How do I get in trouble if I don't use either yours or something like it?
Right. So for me, it became obvious when I tried using like other third-party input components, for example, and I had to handle like the data bindings between the form and the component in question. And so this is what I came up with to solve that.
It's really cumbersome without it to come up with a consistent pattern for interacting with, say, the input tag or the checkbox or something?
I don't think it's hard. It's just that it's a bit of boilerplate to like hook it up. The thing is, like, forms in Svelte are pretty easy because of the binding feature that is in Svelte. So you can pretty much make two-way bindings pretty easily. I don't remember if you talked about this with Rich when he was on.
Not too much. The one thing that some of our listeners may have heard me and Ward and some of the other hosts say at times is, and I'll speak for myself here, and maybe not for Ward, because I feel like the one place HTML has never served us well as an industry is forms. And it's not Angular, I don't like Angular forms. I don't like the way React does forms. I don't like the way anything does forms. And I think it's not because of the frameworks, but because the way HTML implements it, by the time I'm done putting some kind of forms over data screen together, I have more stuff in my code inside the HTML usually, because I prefer template-driven in general, where it's just, you know, there's a validator and a placeholder and there's a regular expression and there's a type and there's a chicken and there's an egg and there's all these things inside my HTML making the form work. And it's like, there's got to be a better way. And Svelte, so I feel like that's a problem. Does Svelte Forms make any of that easier in any way? Or, like, what does it do to try to make your life better over HTML?
Oh, for sure. So, like, the things you were talking about, like, validations and all of this stuff that you usually put, like, you should put them in the HTML elements, right? And the thing is, you can do that with Svelte Forms, and you'll get the correct, like, data back. It's bound to the form element, sort of, and so you can use regular HTML elements pretty much.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Hey, are you building apps in React, Angular, Node, or some other framework? Well, with NX, you can build your full stack apps in a shared mono repo, integrate with modern tools, and reinforce best practices. You'll get advanced code generation and automatically configured tooling like Cypress, Jest, and Prettier that will simplify your workflow. NX also helps you simplify the relationships between applications and shared libraries to make it easier to share more code and develop more consistently across teams. And the best part is, you'll build higher quality apps and spend less time on configuration. So visit nx.dev to get Narwhal's popular open source toolkit for monorepo development today.
And we're back.
What sort of features do you have that are kind of different from your contemporaries? Because I know there's, as I was looking up before the show, there's a bunch of other different Svelte form types of libraries. So like, what's the distinctive thing for what you do?
Right. Yeah. So I built Svelte forms to work in a progressive enhancement kind of way. So all of the features in it are, they fail, I don't remember the word for it, gracefully, which is great for forms. So you can still have an action on that form and point it to some endpoint like you would in the olden days and probably should do in nowadays as well, but here we are. So it's built around a Svelte feature called actions, which is what pretty much enables all of this. And that's you can look at actions as sort of like a lifecycle hooks for HTML elements that you put directly on them. So you get a function that you run on mount, and it runs another function on destroy, pretty much. So that makes it so that you get like a very, very progressively enhanced HTML element that works even if the JavaScript doesn't load, pretty much.
So how does it accomplish that?
So Svelte forms or Svelte actions?
Well, both. Yeah. So how do they work together to make that happen?
How should I explain this? So Svelte actions, it's sort of like a special attribute that you put on your elements, and it points to a function that runs on mount, pretty much, or when the element is mounted. And the Svelte forms action, which is on the form element, runs some JavaScript that is inspired by another library called Formy, which it extracts all the values from the form and then pushes it out to the Svelte component where the action is applied.
Okay.
Or used, rather.
One thing I'm looking at between your GitHub pages, and forgive me for looking at the one you said is probably, you know, not to look at, which is Easy Forms. But I know I was looking at the sample you did in Easy Forms, and it looked like there, again, just not reading through it a lot, but looking at the code, it looks like you're defining your inputs, like a name and an email and a message, all in code. And then you're, you know, imperatively, and then you're going to render those effectively by binding that to the form. Whereas in the newer version that you have, your Svelte forms, it looks like you do more of the work inside the template, as far as not you, but like the yes. person who's actually developing. Yeah. Was that a shift that you intended? Or I'm kind of curious, because you went basically from doing it in the code to doing it in the template. So I'm curious yeah. what was behind that.
So I was pretty tired of like a lot of the form libraries, and I wanted something that was more akin to regular HTML. So this is the route I went down. It makes it easier to integrate other libraries into Svelte forms and use it together with Svelte forms, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's neat because like looking at the code, just again, I haven't used any of these libraries, but looking at Svelte forms, it looks more straightforward to me. Like it looks yes. like this iteration of it seems more straightforward, where the only code is you're importing a form and yeah. from Svelte forms, and you've got like this values variable, which I assume is going to hold the values.
Exactly. Yep.
Then you define in the template a form and you bind the values to it. And then you just simply have normal HTML for your.
Exactly.
So streamlined like when I was looking yeah. at the code sample, I was like, where is it?
Where is it?
Yeah. Doing what it's doing. Cause yeah. at first I missed the bind colon values statement.
Yeah. 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 That's the magic.
I'm curious what sure. Ward thinks on this, because Ward, you and I've had this conversation probably a dozen times over the last couple of years where we've talked about template-driven forms in the HTML or imperative code-driven forms where you start writing all your logic inside the JavaScript or TypeScript. I'm trying to be generic about frameworks on this.
Yeah. So yeah, and I recognize the appeal of the. There are people who would say that when you write it in the code, that you're actually writing some kind of declarative code, but it never looks that way to me. The challenge I've always found with that is that, you know what they say about regex expressions, where you started with one problem and then you end up with two. That's why it feels when you're writing a code, you really haven't alleviated much of the problem with HTML, but now you got two places where you're trying to figure, you know, where you got code. You just got more to write. It's just more madness. So I like anything that is clear about what goes in one place and what goes in the other. And so, you know what you're supposed to put in the HTML, you know what you're supposed to leave in code, and which involves writing less code, not more. And having letting conventions control things, because most of what we do is conventional rather than making you explicitly write everything out. So I had the both. I had the same reaction, Craig. It's like, okay, so what did he do here? What am I doing? And I still have some of those questions. So let me put those to you. I mean, I see, okay, so we're binding to a model. That's when you take the form tag and you say bind to values. And the values is essentially the model that is going to be rendered on the screen with the HTML. Have I got that right, Kevin?
So the values is straight up the values that is like taken from the HTML form itself.
Well, like I see in your example, you have the values object was an object that had a first name property and a last name property. And so when you bind to that, you're essentially saying, hey, everybody in the form here, all the controls in here, like the input controls, when they say they're interested in the first name, they'll be talking about the first name property of my values object, right? So in my world, I call values the model.
Got it. Got it.
The view model, if you will. The view model, if you will.
All right.
And so that's already a convenience, and now I'm template driven. So your example is, you know, sort of really clean. It says, hey, yeah, that's great. That's the way it should work. Now, as somebody who has wrestled with this stuff, you get into the things like, okay, so I want to know what do I do when it blurs? What do I do when do I respond when they press a key, or do I wait for a special key for them to type when I know it's done? How do I tie in to other things? It's all about it's a lot of the time the challenge is to get the events and the event sequencing right out of these HTML elements. That's the hard part of dealing with forms. Well, it is a hard part, not the hard part. How do you confront that? What do I get, or what am I getting from this? And do I get anything that relates to these events? Like when does my model, my values, first name change? Does it change when I type a letter, or does it change at the enter key? How do I control that?
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, it's the on change event on all of the elements, and then you also get the on submit from the actual form. So in this example, you don't have that on the. Like you have bind values, but you don't have, you could put on colon submit there as well, and you would have the submit event there. And there are a bunch of other events as well that are, I don't remember exactly which ones.
So how would you handle validation? So I'm looking at the simple form here. Do you stick like an HTML validation input on there, or are you handling it in a different way?
So I usually go for the yup route, if you've ever used that. It's like a yup. Yeah.
That's what I say just about anything.
Yeah. Yep. So I do have plans on adding like validation actions and other kinds of actions. So I'm actually in the process of writing like the actual validation method. So I want to make it so that you can bring whatever validation method you want, because that makes sense.
Right now, if you were
in my head, at least,
what strategy would you use today?
Yeah. So today I would use yup, okay. And then I would just take the values object and validate that.
Okay.
Using a schema.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay. So you would get the values out of the form, and then you'd use yup to validate against the schema, and then basically kind of manually check and see if you have what you need at that point. Gotcha. Okay.
Exactly. And I realized that, like, for this to be as smooth as possible, you'd want some kind of validation thing. But then again, you can also use like the regular HTML validation.
Right. I could just hook in directly to the event that input raises, and if any event that input raises directly, if I want to.
Right.
So I guess the key, though, using yup, and for those of you out there aren't familiar with yup, it's extremely popular JavaScript library. We put a link into it into the show notes here. It's exactly as it sounds. It's YUP. Super cool library for doing validation. You can set up schemas. But I guess the real key, as Ward and Craig have been asking you here, is where do you connect that inside your forms? Because you still have to run the validation. You can have a validation library, but you have to know when to run it. And I guess that depends upon, you could run on binding. I assume you could run on submit. You could run it on, you know, type, like as you're key pressing or whatever makes you happy, right?
Yeah. So I usually, when I've used it, I've usually just bound it. So in Svelte, you have this reactivity concept, the dollar sign thing. And so you can just set it up to run whenever the values object changes. I'm not entirely sure how performant that is, but depends, I guess, on the size of the form. It should be fine.
And I'll put a link into the reactivity section of the Svelte docs. I don't know what you call this. It's the REPL that's in the Svelte library, basically, which shows you how to use activity, but it shows people how to use the dollar sign.
What about dynamic forms? So if you wanted to create new elements, what does that look like here?
Somebody always has to bring up dynamic forms. I got to tell you, it's like, why is half the world, it seems, is shifting to, we don't know what our forms look like. Let's generate them on the fly. And,
well, your to-do list app, right? You're just going to add new forms on the fly and add stuff in or something like that.
I know. It's a real business case. So I'm just giving you garbage for bringing it up. Sorry.
I think for that use case, I would just use regular Svelte and just do it like how you would add elements in any framework, really, pretty much. And it should theoretically update automatically with the values and all that. Should be completely
fine. You're saying you can use this, but you would just use normal Svelte conventions in order. Okay,
exactly.
And then the values should get all the new values.
Yeah.
It looks like with yup, because I haven't used it for async before, but it looks like you can use yup for async validation too. Is that something that you've done with Svelte forms?
Nothing I've tried, no, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give that a shot, because I definitely, a lot of the little projects that I've worked on over the last year, I've had to do some kind of asynchronous validation where it's not simply just checking to see, you know, is it the data type or the date range, but maybe I need to check, okay, this customer is making an order. Does Kevin actually have money in his account with me to make that order or something like that?
Is the username unique, you know?
Right. Those kind of things you have to have a server, because hopefully you're not bringing, in username case, you're not bringing across a million usernames when you log into something and go, okay, Ward typed in pencil sharpener as his username. Is that something that's already been used? So doing async validations, I think, is an important piece. It's good to see that it works there.
Plus, there's a lot of reactive. There are, you know, when you want to tie into a kind of a reactive framework of some kind, you're often dealing with something that is at least structurally async, even if it executes synchronously. So I don't know how many of your, I don't know if reactive concepts are part of the Svelte universe or not. So that's a different question, I guess. But when you get in with that, you end up with things that, whether they execute synchronously or not, are certainly structured as if they were async.
So checking out forms, one of the other things, like we think about the stuff we always do. You always have to have inputs of all sorts, which it supports because it supports any HTML, it looks like. Again, looking at your docs here, that's kind of what I'm feeling. And the code is relatively simple to get going. You pull in for validation. You can pull in another library if you want to go down that road. One of the other things that happens a lot with forms is doing saving the data in some way locally to say, I want to revert what's happening here. How does Svelte forms, what would be your approach if you wanted to do that? Like Ward starts typing information, then he wants to cancel.
Right. So there are a couple of different routes you could take. one would be just saving like the last value in some variable, right? In the form, like in the parent. Or you could use like a store, a Svelte custom store, to do that. But it all comes down to like how you would yourself wanna solve it. I usually, depending on like how elaborate I need to be when it comes to saving history or stuff like that, I either go for just a single variable and do that, or I could do a custom store, which is a bit neater in my opinion. But
yeah, the stores are an interesting way to go down that road. I guess I always start with simplest first, right? Maybe the first time I did it, I might just create a variable, quite frankly.
Right.
Path to least resistance. Once I found myself doing it more than once or twice, or maybe even if it was just once, but it was getting more, the object was getting more involved or needed more features, maybe I would jump into a Svelte store at that point. And yeah, okay.
And are you talking about like end level undo or just I'm typing away here and realize I'm going to toss the whole thing away?
The latter.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, my usual approach is wherever I got, I just clone whatever I got. That's my view model and I bind to that. And if they don't, you know, I mean, that's the pattern I've used forever. And it's, I guess it's the one we've always used in all of our demos too.
This century or last century?
Yeah, you know, you're killing me. I'm going to use it in the next century too, buddy boy.
You know what, Ward? Every time you and I bring up the words view model, I in a conference when those things used to be in person, we always get these looks from some people like, what does that mean these days? I'm not sure that concept is universal today as it was.
Really? Okay.
Before. So do you want to explain quickly? Because I said a variable and or store as Kevin did, but do you want to explain just briefly what a view model is?
Sure. So a view model is a representation of your data that is convenient for displaying and interacting within a view. So no matter where the data, the source of truth actually is and how broken up and all over the place it might be, as we know, even the simple form, you could be grabbing data from all kinds of different places. Before I even put it on the screen, I shape it up into something that is convenient for putting on the screen and accepting user data. And that's kind of a mapping. And so my view model is a mapping of the real data, but it's designed for display and user interaction. And because it's a copy of the source of truth, I'm free to do anything I want to that. I can mutate it. I can, you know, I can violate all the, you know, anybody who says, oh, no mutation. Hey, that's no. This is my view model. I can do any darn thing I want with that. So that concept of reshaping data to be maximally convenient for your view, that reshape thing is the view model.
So you would use a view model in addition, as stored in a variable somewhere in your app, in addition to using something like Svelte Forms.
In the component, it would never leak out. So, you know, it should, in general, they shouldn't leak out. You can share view models across components, but they have very short lifetime. They're very local. And so there's no need for some elaborate store mechanism behind it because they're not in principle shared. They're not going anywhere. They're just there to make life easier for you.
I had that explanation readily available to me 10 years ago as I was trying to explain this to people and never did such a good job doing it.
It really is. The easiest thing to think about is it just, we always use these fancy words in everything we do, right? But it's just a variable. It's a variable that stores the information as Ward described for your view. It's exactly what Kevin said, right? I just put it in a variable when I start doing this. And there's no reason you can't use Svelte Forms with it, right? I mean, Svelte Forms would work without using a variable, a store, or a more formal view model.
For sure, yeah. Anything you want.
Where it seems like a surprise to people is that the people get all hung up on whether they're binding directly to the original source of the true data. And that's how they get into big trouble. And then they start contorting their view to meet the data storage structure. And it's kind of like, hey, wait a minute. No. I don't care how you store it, right? Or where it goes, or how you got it, or when it's going to get there. Please let me separate myself from that. I just want my thing. So the my thing, it would be another name for Vue. Give me my thing.
So another thing on your docs page here, you talked about it being having an extensibility model. So what are some different ways you can plug into Svelte Forms?
So currently there's a prop to take other actions. So actions are, again, like lifecycle hook functions for Svelte or HTML elements, sorry. And so this is how you would expand it. But then there's also, there are some actions as well that are available, but they aren't currently in the documentation where you can put those actions directly on your HTML elements. So for example, you could have a focus on select action that you would put on your input element, for example, and then every time you click that element, it automatically selects all the text in it. Or like a text area auto resize action that you would put on your text area, where you would, as you type, the size would increase, et cetera, et cetera. Validation, you could use actions for that as well. And yeah.
Well, I'm free to define my own actions, you're saying?
Yes, yes. So actions.
So that's the extensibility model?
Yeah. So actions are a Svelte concept that I've embraced wholly. And I'm expanding this using those.
So can I have an on blur action?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could pretty much do anything you want to do, anything you would want to do in regular HTML, you could do in actions.
What do you think you want it on blur for? Or?
Well, that's because that's when I know they're done.
When right? They blur?
And I want to do something to the model.
Yeah.
You know,
every time they leave a specific text box on a form, you'd want to go ahead and check the model each one.
Right. Maybe I don't want to do validation until they blur because it'll never pass validation while they're typing. I mean, there's a gazillion things that are conveniently done on blur. And the reason I picked that out was because let's suppose this, you know, you hadn't done anything for on blur. Like, you know, can you wave your voice around and sort of say, okay, suppose you wanted to create this custom, here's what you would do. So how would I create an action? Since people have an intuition about what blurring out of an input box is, how would I create my custom action to work on blur?
So you wouldn't necessarily want to make an action for the on blur event unless you want to do something specific to each HTML element, or I guess maybe that's what you're asking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you could. Like it's simply a function that receives a node, like an HTML node, and you can do anything there. You can emit events, you can change styling, like anything you could do to a regular HTML element, you could do in there, pretty much.
When I create an action, so I got this right, I create an action, and I know that one of the things I'm going to receive, and whatever the thing is I'm going to receive the current node party on?
Yep.
Okay. Now I think I know where it is, where I... You know, you're going to hand me essentially the input element and say, all right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here it is. I hope you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Sort of like that. So, yeah, you that's kind of how you can look at actions in a way. It's sort of like an escape hatch to fiddle around with the HTML underneath, sort of, if that makes sense.
So let's follow through on that. So let's say, that's great. So what I need to do is you're going to give me the input node. So I'm going to hook into something and maybe I'm even going to hook in to listen to the mouse moving or who knows what I'm going to do. I can do anything from that starting place. But at some point I'm going to have to let go, like when the form is going to be destroyed. So there must be part of your protocol where as an author of an action, you're going to tell me about the life cycle of this thing, at least the destruction, the creation and destruction. Is that true? You're going to tell me something?
Yeah. So the Svelte actions, from the action, you return an update and a destroy function. Okay. So you run those on update or destroy, pretty much.
So you've created a protocol for me to just enrich this without having to put a whole lot of crap in the template because I've got this sort of well-rehearsed list of actions that tie nicely into an input node.
Yes. And then Svelte actions are a great way to extend things in progressively enhanced way, because nothing breaks if you don't have your on blur action, for example. You could still interact with the form.
So I'm going to drop in a link on create. It's a tutorial on creating actions. The one that's in the Svelte docs does one for being pannable. So I guess panning on the screen. So people can try this out if they want to.
It's one of those features where most people don't realize it exists, but then you start using it and you realize how awesome it is and how convenient. And it's sort of like, it's one of those things where you get one of those aha moments and you're really excited. So I think people should check it out. It's one of my favorite features.
I certainly see the value, because one of the things that drives me crazy looking at the HTML, lots of things drive me crazy. So there's nothing unique about
that. Yeah, it's like this every episode, something's driving you crazy. We should have a new segment in our episode.
What drives you crazy?
What is driving Ward crazy today?
Well, you have a choice for where you're going to find the mess. And,
yeah, I thought you were, I set you up. I thought you were going to say John.
John drives me crazy. But looking at HTML, you know, you can look at some templates and you just want to run and hide, because it's not the friendliest language in the world. And you can quickly clutter up HTML with classes and events and bindings and God knows what. And suddenly this thing is, you don't know what it's doing. And a template is not the most testable thing in the world.
Well, some people would say that's why Pug exists, right? Just get rid of all the HTML and just use Pug, right, Ward? And that solves everything?
Yes. Well, yeah, you could say that, John.
So I've gone off the deep end. I'm sorry. But
so I like the idea of saying I have this collection of actions, which I can optionally add to this thing. But that's a way. My HTML is clean. I can look at it and say, what am I asking? I'm asking for a first name and a last name. Got it. Thank you. All right. I get it. You start cluttering that thing up, and I don't know what I'm really asking. I don't know when it's going to do something. I don't know what it's going to do. And I have a maintenance nightmare. So I like anything that removes the amount of HTML I write and removes the amount of code I write. So I like where you're going.
So one of the things that you mentioned at the top was styling. You said you looked at some of the other libraries and there was a styling issue. What sort of affordances do you have in your library to make it easier to handle that?
Yeah, so I don't handle styling at all. I leave that completely up to the user.
That's a curious question though, Craig. Where are you going with that?
Well, I thought that's what was one of the pain points that you were experiencing as you were looking at different libraries. And you said that it kind of led you down this path to want to create something different. And certainly, we have all these needs for validation and events and all this stuff. But one of the things you have to do is you have to put that validation error message somewhere useful on the screen. And so styling definitely is important. So, yeah, I didn't know if you were considering that.
It's sort of like, If you have like a form library that contains like input components or other kinds of components, you would always have to pass in some styling attributes, and you would never, probably shouldn't say never, but it's hard to style it exactly as you want it, and every project is sort of different. Is kind of my take on it, and so I leave it up to the user to. So they can use whatever input component they want.
Let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors. Hey Ward, I was building an application the other day and I pulled in this really cool UI component, but it brought along a lot of dependencies with it. How do you deal with that?
I don't like that, John. It reminds me that the AG grid, which is an advanced editable data table that we use in a lot of our enterprise apps because it addresses the complex scenarios we encounter. AG Grid doesn't have any dependencies at all.
Zero dependencies. Well, tell me, why is that good? Like, what is the value of having zero dependencies?
Well, it's wonderful not having to wonder if while I'm pulling that in, I'm also pulling jQuery in or Lodash or who knows what. in part because that's extra stuff coming over the wire. It's extra files that I don't know what they're all about. It means when my client's security team has to evaluate this, they're evaluating AG Grid and not everything else that might be slipping in under the covers or something that we have to worry about there.
You know, it's great to see this day and age, you can have a zero dependency library that does something like complex data grid functionality. So all of you out there, do check out AG Grid at their website at ag-grid.com. And we're back.
So, Kevin, I know you have Svelte Forms and you have Svelte School. Like, what other projects or activities are on your plate at the moment?
I'm currently organizing a, or not just me, but Svelte Society, which is the sort of the community part of Svelte. We're organizing a conference online for free called Svelte Summit. And you can check it out for some really awesome talks. We're going to talk about Svelte at the edge, for example, using Cloudflare workers, Elder.js, which is a blazing fast static site generator with partial hydration, awesome, as well as REPLs and how you build them in Svelte, among a lot of other things.
I always wanted to build my own REPL. You know, I know it's probably not like the simplest thing, but not the most complex, but they're just so cool. I love being able to go online and use like the one that Svelte has. And, you know, the earliest REPL I really fell in love with on the web was, remember back in the early days of Knockout.js, when we were playing around with, you know, before Angular and React and all this other stuff happened, Knockout was the thing. And it had a REPL where you could actually try the library in the browser. And I just found that to be so incredibly useful out there.
It definitely is. Like the Svelte REPL is super good.
Oh, really good. Yes.
Almost any frame or little library, you know, it would be great if it had one of those. The one for RxJS is excellent. It's a great teaching tool. And it's so convenient because all you do is you open up the browser tools and suddenly when you're on their webpage, and there it is. Not a lot of people know it's there, but it's a great thing to show during a, you know, when you're doing a conference talk. So REPLs are really good way to explore a library.
You want to drop that one into the link to the RxJS REPL into the chat there, Ward? And I'll take a look and see if Knockouts is still out there as well, for that matter. But so at the end of our show, Kevin, we like to leave our audience with a final thought from each of our guests and hosts. And this can be on topic or off topic. Is there a final thought that you have? I'll start with Craig Shoemaker.
So I'm not a teenager anymore, strangely enough. And I feel like really? It's taken me way too long to get to this point in my life where I realized the value of just taking time in the morning to be quiet and journal. And I've just gotten so much out of it lately. If that's something that could be of any use or value to you in your life, I'd say consider giving it a shot. And I've been able to be kind of consistent. So it's kind of been cool and neat in my life. So.
And what do you journal?
Well, I try to think about questions that would be important to me for just being intentional about my life, whether it's something that's important to my kids or my wife or work or my personal life. And it's just kind of helps focus me.
Wow. That was like deep thought. So I feel like I should be doing that. Do you use, I happen to use, I'm holding it up, those out there can't see it, Field Notes books to kind of take my own notes throughout the day. And sometimes I also draw inside there.
I found that my penmanship was so horrible that I finally started using graph paper journals. And then I could actually read my writing after the fact because it would fit inside the tiny little squares. Because
me too.
I cannot write anymore. I spend too much time on a computer.
It is really nice actually having graph paper where the graph paper is like really faint on it so you can draw, because you don't really see the graph when you're reading it, but it does help you when you're writing it so you don't end up writing like on this 30 degree angle, left-handed or right-handed. But right. No, I love that tip. That's a great thought. Ward, what's your final thought for our audience today?
Geez, I kind of go the opposite direction. I live by the motto, contrary to Plato or Aristotle, I forget whom, the unexamined life really is worth living. Okay, so anyway,
Were these friends of yours back in the day?
Yeah, yeah. We used to sit around in our togas and rock around. And he was trying to convince me that I should be true to myself and examine my life and all that. And I said, no. The self-examination stuff is not what it's cracked up to be. Because who knows what you might find. better to just wing it. My real thought is that recently my wife and I went on a road trip to the Grand Canyon. I didn't crack my computer for a week. That's my tip. That's my real tip. There's something wonderful about not touching a computer for a week. No email. I mean, I knew they were there, but I didn't look. And the world does not actually care. It feels like it cares while you're there, while you're in it. But when you just go away and drop that stuff and you walk the Grand Canyon, you walk these trails and you see these sunsets and you're with people you care about, it has the effect that I think, Craig, you're kind of, it's a different way to get what you're getting.
Are you trying to tell folks, Ward, that when my Teams, Slack, and Discord are dinging constantly all day long, I don't have to answer those things immediately?
I suggest taking the phone and submerging it in 6 feet of water.
Actually, didn't you do that recently with your phone?
I did, but not intentionally. And that's how I learned that the iPhone is not as water resistant as it says.
At least yours wasn't, right? Oh, that's great advice. Kevin, what's your final thought for our audience today?
Yeah. So I think I'm going to say a few words on contributing to open source. Because that's how I pretty much got into Svelte and how meaningful it is to add code to projects that are used by a lot of people. And it's a great way to learn. You'll get code reviews for free. And you'll make friends.
Everybody wins.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave everybody with a final thought today about something I've been doing since, gosh, I think Memorial Day of this year. And this happens to me a lot as I've gotten older, where I tend to get so engrossed in what's going on with work and life and everything else. As Ward said, it's good to disconnect. As Craig said, it's good to, you know, organize yourself. And as Kevin mentioned with open source, it's a lot of fun, but it also can consume you, which I found myself getting sucked in more and more to open source and work. And what happened to me was my mental and emotional state was really deteriorating in late May of this year. I noticed it. And a lot of it was tied to a simple fix that isn't so simple to do. And that was exercising. I had let exercise lapse so much. And I really enjoy exercising, but I'd not done it in a very long time, more than like, you know, a day here or there kind of thing. So I got back into it. And by doing it just a little bit every day, just do something reasonable, say 30 minutes a day, I'm going to do something that's active. That's not including sitting on my couch or chair coding, right? And by doing that, it immediately helped my physical state, yes, but it helped my mental and emotional state, which was really what I was more concerned about, because, you know, I was getting depressed and sad and, you know, it was just not a good state to be in for everything. By doing something active, and for me, it turned out to be two things. I either bike or run every day, one of the two. My joints are getting older, so running hurts sometimes. And that's when I ride a bicycle, just to get outside. And those moments are for me to think. Sometimes I bring music, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I bring an audiobook. Sometimes I just listen to myself when I'm out there, and that helps. And the other thing was I enjoy doing workouts at home. I don't want to go to a gym. To be honest, this craze with going to a gym where you've got to pack up your car, get all your workout equipment, set up a locker, compete with other people for the machines that are there. And now in COVID, sweating all over each other. Yeah, it's just not a thing I'm into. If it's for you, I apologize. But for me, I like just walking upstairs into my loft area, my second TV room thing, which I'm blessed to have, pop in some kind of a workout video, and I do it. And I change it up all the time. But that's helped me quite a bit, because now I'm doing a little bit of outdoor and I'm doing a little bit of other exercise. And it's really helped me over the last 3 or 4 months, to however time has elapsed this year, in 2020 deal with the crazy events we have. So, you know, I'm not saying it's for everybody, but I do recommend, since we've got this theme today of, you know, how do you deal with today so much? I recommend that folks get out there, they do some exercise, even if it's just a walk in the park. It's really, really good for you mentally. So that's my final thought for today. And I want to thank all of you for listening to us for yet another week of, wow, 107 weeks of Real Talk JavaScript podcast. And for our great hosts who've been with us here throughout so much of it, for our wonderful guests, and for you, Kevin, today, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Very fun.
For our wonderful sponsors as well. This week, our sponsors for our show are AG Grid and Narwhal. Thank you so much for sponsoring us. We've also had many other sponsors on as well, and we look forward to hearing your feedback on social media so you can hear from us and see us in your minds every Thursday morning. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter at @realtalkjs.